It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to Andy Staples on 3. It is draft day. Lots of people, well, 32 people, will have their lives changed tonight. That's going to be beautiful. And then much more on Friday and Saturday. That's going to be fun. I can't wait. It's one of my favorite sporting events of the year that's not actually a sporting event. And you know, I go back to 4 years ago during the pandemic. The draft was really the first thing. Once the pandemic shutdown really started, it was the first thing that felt like we all got back together as sports fans. And it just made me happy to know that it was going to go on. Like, sports were going to go on. Life was going to go on. And so, you know, maybe bring Roger Goodell's chair back just for old time's sake. But I'm very excited to watch the draft tonight, see how wrong my mock draft is. Because the first time somebody makes a trade, my mock draft just gets blown all to hell. If you haven't read the mock draft yet, it's on the On3 website. Feel free to fade it. Feel free to agree with it. I think it's perfect. I guarantee you some team is going to trade up to number 2 and it's going to be shot to hell. Maybe not number 2. The Commanders need a quarterback. They're going to pick a quarterback. We're going to talk more about the draft in Dear Andy. We're going to talk about Reggie Bush in Dear Andy. Reggie Bush got his Heisman back yesterday. That happened right as the show ended. So we did an emergency show afterward, but we can talk a little more about that as well. A couple questions relating to that, including one that sort of spurred a completely independent discussion that is going to be a Dear Andy question that is going to be a massive debate, I can tell you right now, with the audience of this show, because I know you. I know what you like. I know how you came up. You are going to argue with me over this, and I cannot wait. I cannot wait. It'll be the first question of Dear Andy. It's going to be awesome. But yes, Reggie Bush got his Heisman back. Better late than never. It was pretty incredible that the Heisman Trust, and I will point this out because I've gotten a lot of people asking about this. How come the NCAA did this and didn't do this? How come the NCAA did this and didn't do this? The NCAA did not give Reggie Bush his Heisman back. The Heisman Trust did. So if you're looking for the NCAA to vacate penalties they vacated, they're not going to do that. Like, they don't care. It's over. Reggie Bush was without his Heisman officially. I think they actually took the physical trophy back too. So this was something that you could actually correct, and they did. Was it too late? Sure, but they did it. And I think they did it because they were probably going to be faced with a boycott of Heisman winners from the Heisman ceremony. Johnny Manziel said he was going to boycott it. I think there were going to be others who were going to boycott it. But the fact of the matter is what Reggie Bush did, which was take money from two guys who wanted to be his agent, is completely legal now. Should have been legal then. Just because the NCAA cooked up a case, which, by the way, it had to pay for, because when it got taken to an actual court of law, they had to settle because they knew they were wrong. They had to cook up a case to tie it to USC. Go back and read all that. I'm telling you. Like, look up Big Worm, Todd McNair, Reggie Bush. And you're like, who's Big Worm? Watch Friday, classic comedy from the 90s. Big Worm is a character played by Faison Love. Faison Love is in a photo that figures prominently in that investigation. It's one of the stupidest things you'll ever see in your life. But that's where we were back in 2009, 2010 when that case was going on, 2006 when all that news came out. We were still in the mode of, oh no, an athlete took money. As if they didn't deserve the money. Fortunately, we're in a better place now. And Reggie Bush has his Heisman back. But Reggie getting his Heisman back spurred an incredibly fun question. We'll get to that in Dear Andy. In a minute, we'll be talking to Pete Nakos, On3 national reporter. A little transfer portal update. We have a player of consequence alert. A player of consequence decided to enter the portal yesterday. We also have a prediction for a high-profile quarterback in the transfer portal. But one more piece of news. The college football playoff has figured out how to solve the Army-Navy conundrum. And what is the Army-Navy conundrum? Well, Army and Navy, by the way, in the same conference now. Army's joined the American. And the thought was, okay, how do we handle the selection? Because we're going to pick the playoff teams before Army and Navy play, because they play the weekend following the conference championship games. And they have said they're not moving that game. Sponsorships are sold. Everything's set. CBS doesn't want to move it. They're not moving it. And it's one of the most viewed games of the year, usually. So incentive to keep it where it is. Well, they figured it out. It's just not going to count for playoff selection. It's going to be treated almost like an exhibition game. And if one of those two teams is the highest ranked group of five champ, they're in the playoff regardless of the result of that game. So that is how they're going to solve the problem. Army Navy stays where it is. You can cry and yell about it if you want. And someone will, if it turns out that one of those two teams is up for the highest rated group of five champ. But the chances of that happening frequently are rare. And I think the tradition of that game, especially within the grand tradition of college football, let's just leave it where it is. This is good. I'm all right with that. You know I'm usually okay to roll with the changes, but I do like sometimes when they nod to tradition. And this is a good place for that, because it's so rarely going to affect the actual playoff selection that it doesn't matter. Keep it where it is. Everybody loves that game. Let's roll. All right. Let us join Pete Nakos now. Pete, we got a question later in the show from the guy who came up with the term Nakosifications.
Whoa, okay. I'm going to need to set up a meetup with him.
Oh, listen, I think you owe Willie a commission, because Nakosifications is a great term.
It is. All right, Willie, we're gonna have to chat about this. But happy draft day.
Happy draft day to you. But it's you know, roster building in college football never stops. Speaking of Nakosifications, I got one last night. I'm at my kid's lacrosse game. Kristen Miller from Georgia, heading into the transfer portal. Player of consequence update. And I realize people are, you know, what do you mean player of this is what I'm trying to create a term here. I'm not as good at branding, Pete, as some other college football YouTubers, but I'm working on it. And I feel like in the spring window, we need to note when a player of consequence enters the portal so people understand this is not someone the team wanted to lose. So yeah. Kristen Miller from Georgia, not someone Georgia wanted to lose.
Yeah, I mean, a guy who's going to either start or be a huge contributor and was already a contributor for the Bulldogs this past season. And man, I remember that recruitment actually, because he came down to Georgia and Ohio State, and he obviously decided to go to the Bulldogs, but he will immediately become one of the more sought after defensive linemen in the portal. And Andy, I mean, you know this, I know this, but he has multiple years of eligibility remaining, which is like such a big deal in the transfer portal.
So he can't go anywhere in the SEC because of that SEC rule. So he, like you said, big time defensive lineman. He played 209 snaps at Georgia last year. That was fourth most among the interior defensive linemen. So this is a guy who could play. Now, Bear Alexander did this last year, moving from Georgia to USC following spring practice. Is there a chance that Miller winds up teaming with Bear Alexander?
You know, I haven't thought about that, but it wouldn't surprise me either. I actually had someone at USC reach out to me last night about Kristen Miller. So I don't know. Don't rule it out. But I also don't have like all the intel on that to tell you that I think it's going to happen.
Who would the other possibility? Like, we've seen Florida State feast on guys like Jermaine Johnson came from Georgia to Florida State a couple of years ago and became a first round draft pick, was the ACC Defensive Player of the Year. I would assume Miami, like everybody's in the market for.
Yeah, I mean, I would personally think that Miami is going to become a school to watch immediately. Texas can't take him, but I mean, Texas is commanding the defensive tackle market at the moment. I mean, I was told that they're paying like close to, they're offering up to $1 million and for some of these top defense linemen. And I mean, you talk to all these schools right now and they'll tell you that the defense linemen are running through Texas. Like, you're just trying to make sure that you can compete with Texas when they get a kid on campus.
Yeah, but he's probably not going to sit a year to go to Texas. So that'll
right. No,
that SEC rule really does liven things up in this this marketplace.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why the those two Michigan State defense tackles are now like the more sought after guys, along with the TCU defense lineman Dominic Williams.
So that is the high demand position. Do you feel like, because it's in such high demand, and we talked about this a little bit on the show, Pete, because it's, you know, Texas needs some, Oklahoma needs them,
LSU
needs them. These are all places that have money. And if you are in the Big Ten, if you are in the Big 12, if you are in the ACC, do you have to think about that right now?
Yeah, I think you have to think about it. And I mean, Andy, we're going to the 12-team playoff. Like, that's no secret anymore. But I mean, if the SEC's really good this year, and it looks like the trenches are going to be really good, I mean, those are things that CFP teams are going to have to take into consideration. And we have a really interesting dynamic too right now, where there's going to be like the Georgias and Alabamas, but like Missouri and Ole Miss are going to have great lines.
Missouri just got an all AAC transfer from SMU on the offensive line. Like, that, yeah, that's where those guys are going. So it's very interesting how that's changing, because we always talk, we've talked like a lot about Colorado and their roster building, but we've said, okay, they don't seem to be able to get anybody on the line of scrimmage. And probably, I would imagine, their NIL is just not where these SEC schools' NIL is.
No, it's not. I mean, you look across the board and across the entire D1 landscape, and I would say the majority of SEC teams are in that like upper echelon of NIL dollars, right? It goes Oregon, Texas, and then from there you kind of go like Ohio State, Tennessee, Ole Miss, Missouri. I mean, it bounces around a little bit, but and then Miami's up there too. So all these teams we're talking about right now are also the top spenders in NIL.
Yeah, and speaking of SEC teams taking players from other leagues, DeAndre Lambert-Smith, who was maybe the top receiver in the portal, he came from Penn State. He committed to Auburn on Wednesday, and Auburn has really kind of reshaped its receiver room. Now, obviously, Cam Coleman, the freshman who they signed out of high school, is the guy that everybody's super excited about. But it feels like that's a completely different receiver room than last year. And we kept talking about, oh, are they going to take a quarterback? Maybe they just need to give Peyton Thorne better people to throw to.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the pickup in the sense, too, it might really help Cam Coleman's development to work with a veteran guy who has experience playing in the biggest stages in the Big Ten. Now he goes to Auburn. And, I mean, Keiondre Lambert-Smith obviously led the Nittany Lions in receptions and receiving yards last year. But at the same time, I think this is also a really big chance for him to go down to the SEC and Auburn and prove that he can be a high-caliber guy when it comes to the NFL draft in 2025.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see, because part of the issue, and I remember when he entered the portal, you never know how much of this is sour grapes, but you're thinking, okay, Penn State's passing attack was not that spectacular last year. It didn't really scare you. So how good are we talking about here? But now he gets a chance to show that at a place where they need receivers.
Yeah, and then, I mean, on the flip side, you talked about Penn. I mean, I still think Penn State probably needs to go add a wide receiver in the transfer portal, and haven't heard a lot about that at this point. I know the Arizona State transfer, Elijah Badger, is still out there. He was at Washington earlier this week. But, yeah, I mean, Penn State needs to go add a guy, too. And I mean, I think you and I talked about this, but they added Julian Fleming in the winter. And, like, we kind of thought, okay, Julian Fleming, Keiondre Lambert-Smith, like, that could be a good duo for Drew Aller, and now Lambert-Smith's out the door.
Yeah, and Julian Fleming is a solid pickup and a good receiver, but you know, he was at Ohio State. He was stuck on the depth chart behind some superstars. So maybe it's just that he's been behind superstars the entire time, and we haven't really gotten a chance to see it. But I don't get the sense that this is like a Jameson Williams thing, where he goes from being buried at the depth chart at Ohio State to being you know, a first round draft pick. I think I would imagine this is like a solid pickup for Penn State rather than guy who changes everything for your passing game.
Right. And I think when you go back and in hindsight, right, you look through the lens of like, okay, he was going to be a really great guy to like add in as a wrinkle. He was not ready to be wide receiver one at Penn State, in my opinion. And that really leaves James Franklin in a pickle.
Yeah. We'll find out about that one. Speaking of Arizona State transfers, you put in an RPM prediction on Jaden Rashada, the quarterback who's leaving Arizona State, and it was a school that you mentioned the night that he entered the transfer portal.
Yeah, so Jaden Rashada has been at Georgia the last 48 hours now. He's finishing up there this morning. I did put in a prediction for Rashada to land at Georgia. I also made sure to put in my story that they still haven't talked to NIL, but it's been emphasized to me over and over again that this decision doesn't have to do with NIL. So
I don't get the sense that there's any NIL money in this transaction.
No, I mean, talking to some people and this has everything to do about development. I think that Jaden Rashada really wants to go to a place where he feels like he can maybe take a deep breath for a minute and develop. And it's no secret Carson Beck has that starting job locked up. He's going to be a first round talent next year in the draft. And I think that this really provides the opportunity for Jaden Rashada to develop, but also if everything goes well, he's going to be in a position to actually compete for the starting job at Georgia in a year.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It felt like last year when he went to Arizona State, that was the goal because they dealt with all the stuff at Florida, which had he signed with Florida and that money been real, he would have had to play.
Yes.
Which would have been a disaster last year. And then he goes to Arizona State and you think, okay, he can sit behind Drew Pine. Well, Drew Pine gets hurt. He winds up starting the first couple games at Arizona State. Like, yeah. That was not the plan. The plan was for him to sit and develop. So now you sit and develop at a superpower behind a guy who's going to be probably a first round draft pick next year. So it's a pretty good situation. And I don't know, Pete, it didn't seem like there was a lot of NIL money at Arizona State either. That was a case of, hey, we're looking for a place to play.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you that there was not $13.85 million at Arizona State.
No, there was a deal with a bike shop. I remember there was. That
happened. He had a couple other deals too. I don't think he made more than the six figures.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with Jaden Rashada. That's one of those, you know, I know he's a lightning rod when it comes to NIL. Everything I did story-wise and you know, talking to people about that situation, I never got the sense the person himself, Jaden Rashada, was driving any of this. And I would like to see him have a chance to succeed. It would be nice because he's sort of been sort of dragged through this process.
And I mean, you've reported on it. I've reported on it. I think the one thing people forget about too, Jaden Rashada, is he had one of the better arms in that 2023 class. Like, I talked to some people who know that Kirby Smart watch tape and they loved like seeing like Rashada's arm. And I think that in the right environment and everything, Jaden Rashada, there was a reason why he was such a highly touted quarterback. And that's because he has a lot of upside. So it'd be cool to be able to see him land in a spot where maybe he can actually tap into that talent and just show off his arm strength.
Well, that is very interesting. There's a lot going on. When the players of consequence enter. Oh, one more. Speaking of player of consequence, Dylan Edwards, necessarily to the level of Kristen Miller, but he was a guy Colorado did not expect to lose. He was a guy Colorado had in their plans for the fall, even with Dallin Hayden coming in. Where do we think Dylan Edwards winds up?
Yeah, you know, so Steve Wiltfong and I talked to some sources and tried to kind of cobble together an early list of schools to watch. I think K-State and Nebraska are the schools to watch. I know Kansas was going to kick the tires, and I know Texas A&M was interested, but I think the two schools out of the gate to watch are definitely Kansas State and Nebraska. All that said, though, Dylan Edwards is a track star, and how he factors that into his recruitment could kind of weigh in. Like, he can go to the SEC, and the SEC does have some really great track programs. So,
yeah. Yeah, because Arkansas, Florida, yeah, those are big track schools. Like, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way. Well, the Oregon's pretty loaded. Would they need somebody, or is that
I don't think really Oregon would in the picture.
No. I really like Kansas State, Nebraska right now. But as I said, like, it would not stun me if he went to an SEC school because of track.
I just think once Avery Johnson tweeted out the picture of the two of them playing peewee ball, like, it's just too cute to not recreate.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you? And then he tweeted a little home emoji and it's very cute.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And Avery Johnson falling on three. How about that?
I know.
Appreciate it, Avery.
Yeah.
We appreciate the love. Yeah. Listen, everybody loves Hayes Fawcett. Let's be real here.
Yeah. I mean, Hayes is our guy.
Pete, thank you so much. We will be back in touch very soon. I imagine this will be a very interesting weekend as we watch the NFL guys get drafted. We will also see probably some dominoes fall in the portal in terms of guys committing to school. So we will probably talk to you on Monday.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Pete. Pete Nakos, if you are not signed up for Nakosifications, I'm going to have to talk to our tech people because, you know, we got the On3 app now. We got to have like a special notification that comes straight into your phone for a Nakosification and for a Fong bomb, for a Steve Wilt Fong predicting where somebody's going to go to school. Like, we need that where it makes, like, maybe for the Fong bomb, it makes the flex bomb noise when it hits your phone. Now you can change your settings, obviously, so that it doesn't go off in meetings or anything. But if you Funkmaster Flex in New York, the DJ, he's got the flex bomb. That's what we need when Steve Wiltfong makes a prediction. And we need something else for an Nakosification. I'm thinking something like the draft chime. Because Pete's a very elegant guy. We need something like that. So I'm going to get with our tech people. We're going to make this happen. But right now, my favorite time of the week, because this is when you guys drive the show. This is when you guys help us make the show what it is. Andrew says he was done playing for clicks. This was about Dylan Edwards. That was about Dylan Edwards. Cormani McClain said that. We always play for clicks here, though. And we're about to get some. I'm telling you right now. So question number one, right out of the gate. So this one comes from the Reggie Bush news on Wednesday, as everybody was talking about the Reggie Bush news. So this one comes from Shannon, who happens to be my boss. He did not know he was asking a Dear Andy question. I texted him later and let him know. You just asked a Dear Andy question. But Shannon Terry, founder of On3, was responding to the Reggie Bush news. And he said, the best high school football highlight tape of all time? ? And that ignited a debate online. That ignited a debate about who had the best high school highlight tape. And I have thoughts on this because obviously I'm right in the wheelhouse. I was in my early 20s when YouTube was created. You guys who are younger, you guys who are in your 20s now, have no concept of what it was like when suddenly we could watch these high school players that we'd heard about or that we'd read about in magazines or on the internet. Okay. We got to start with a little bit of the history of recruiting and how it used to work. In the 90s, if you wanted recruiting news, you had to call a 1-900 number. Like, you got charged $2.95 a minute. And they'd be like, yeah, this dude's going to Nebraska. This dude's going to Ohio State. And these are like commitments, which you couldn't just look it up on the internet. And you didn't really know who these dudes were, but you maybe had a copy of Super Prep. Or you maybe had a copy of Tom Lemming's magazine. And so you might have seen a picture and you might have read some stats, but you didn't know anything about them. The turn of the century brings the internet recruiting era into existence. And Shannon Terry, the guy who asked this question, has a lot to do with that. So he buys Rivals out of bankruptcy and builds it up into a bigger company. And they kind of pioneered how all this works, the ranking of recruits. And then you had Huddle was created, which now teams use to share film, players used to share film. All of this stuff didn't exist. And so when these videos started coming onto YouTube, it was like manna from heaven. If you were a football nerd, to be able to see this person who lived 3,000 miles away from you playing football, like moving on screen. And remember, early on, this is the dial-up era. Like, you're waiting on these videos. It's just, it's incredible to think about. And so I ranked my top 10. And I'll tell you, there's a couple that I was disappointed that I couldn't include. There were some amazing ones. Like, there's a guy named Jeff Luck. And people from Florida of a certain age know who Jeff Luck is. Cincinnati fans, I think, also know who Jeff Luck is. Jeff Luck was a linebacker at Treasure Coast High School in the late aughts. He had a highlight tape where the first three plays were him making people explode. He was a linebacker, and it was just, whoa! Now, he's also proof of why you can't just go buy a highlight tape. You need to see a full game. Because Jeff Luck signed with Florida State. He was actually a very important signee for Florida State because he was a big-time recruit in the state of Florida in his year. I believe it was 2010 was his recruiting year. And him committing to Florida State helped a lot of other people decide to commit to Florida State. And a lot of the building blocks of the 2013 national title team were signing with Florida State in part because Jeff Luck was signing with Florida State. Now, he had transferred out to Cincinnati by then. The problem with Jeff Luck is he wasn't super flexible, probably should have been playing D tackle, probably wasn't a linebacker. And so it didn't work. But he ended up playing at Cincinnati and playing well. He played in Canada. So he had a career, but he was a legend. So he just missed the cut. But we'll start number 10. And this one, I actually had a little bit of a hard time with because I feel like it's a little too slick because it's later in the time. And then it's also in Texas where everything was sort of the technology was more advanced. All the game, all their games are on TV if they're playing at a big school by this point. So it's like an HD. Like, it's really weird not watching the grainy footage. But I went Kyler Murray, Allen High School, number 10. And Kyler Murray looked in high school exactly what you would imagine him looking like. Nobody could touch him. Nobody. This dude was undefeated in high school. He was just electrifying. So this is just the highlight tape is like 20 minutes of him dodging people and then uncorking these unbelievable throws. It's pretty impressive. But again, like the HD of it all throws me off because I came up in the era of grainy, like sometimes VHS put onto YouTube. But it was really fun to watch and definitely predicted what was going to happen in the future. My number 9, now this is one that was before the YouTube era, and somebody went back and found it and put it on YouTube, but this one's incredible. So this is a guy who played at Bethel High School in Hampton, Virginia. The real ones know who I'm talking about. They're like, wait a second, is this not a football player? Well, he was a football player back then. He just happened to grow into one of the best NBA point guards ever. Allen Iverson was a dog on the football field, a dog. So he was a quarterback, DB, kick returner. And I am convinced that if Allen Iverson had never played baseball or never played basketball, excuse me, he would have been an all-pro safety, corner, you name it. Because he could lay the wood, he could cover, he had incredible ball skills, he had incredible instincts with the ball in his hand. He would have been probably a punt returner. He was amazing. Like you can tell that this guy would be incredible at any sport he ever played. But now I kind of want the alternate history where Allen Iverson was an all-time great DB because I think that's what he would have been. All right, number 8. We go to Yulee High School, just north of Jacksonville in Nassau County, Florida. Derrick Henry. You want to see a man playing among boys? Watch Derrick Henry. It's like watching a Coke machine run through people. He was massive. He was as big then as he is now. I did a story when I was at SI the year that Derrick Henry won the Heisman, where I went back and talked to the kids who were on his high school football team, who played on the scout team on his high school football team, who had to try to tackle him. And I remember one of them telling me, it was like grabbing onto a freight train. You just held on and went for the ride. Like, he would carry them as far as he wanted to carry them and then set them down while still holding on to the ball. Derrick Henry was incredible. The other thing is, he had like 40 carries a game in high school. Like, there was no worry about tread on the tires. Derrick Henry has been a cyborg for his entire life. Here's another one that was unearthed later. But if you've seen this clip going around, and it's been passed around on social media for a long time now, John Elway at Granada Hills High School. So this is in the 70s. And he looks like he is coming from the future. Like, this is the 70s when he's making these throws. This does not look like an offense that you would have seen in the 70s. And obviously, he goes on to become one of the greatest players of all time. But nobody could do this stuff back then. It's unbelievable. We now move to a guy who played at high school, one of my favorite high school team nicknames in America. In Baltimore, Dunbar High School, the Poets. Tavon Austin was a Dunbar Poet. Tavon Austin did not get tackled. I'm not sure he got tackled once in high school. There, if you go and watch the full clip of Tavon Austin, there's so many plays where he is so fast and so far ahead of everybody else on the field. He is run by every single person on the defense. He's just looking back and waiting for people. He's like, where did everybody go? Just spectacular. Just juking everybody. Not the best juke film I watched. Now, the best juke film I watched didn't make the list, but it came close. Rock Thomas, who played running back at Auburn, go look at his highlight tape because he's juke. There's a play where he jukes all 11 guys on the defense, but that still doesn't compare to Tavon Austin. Tavon with the Dunbar Poets was unstoppable. Speaking of unstoppable, Madison High School in Houston, early 2000s. Vince Young. Vince Young at Madison High School looked exactly like Vince Young at Texas. Bigger than everybody else, faster than everybody else. No chance. Like, think about this. Like, USC guys couldn't tackle Vince Young in the Rose Bowl. How is a high school kid going to have a chance? Because he's basically the same guy that you're going to see in the Rose Bowl in a few years. And these poor kids are just bouncing off of Vince Young. I can't even imagine. I met Vince Young in person, and I covered that USC Texas Rose Bowl, but I met Vince Young in person a few years later and just remember walking up to him like, how on earth did anyone ever tackle you? He's massive, and he was that big in high school. We're talking 6'5", like 230, 240. Probably heavier than that when he was at Texas. Unbelievable. We're going to stay in Metro Houston for number four, though. And this is one of those ways you can tell a diehard sicko college football fan. If they've seen this highlight tape, you know you are among your people. You are among the right people, the people who dive deep into these things, who were probably trying to get that Reggie Bush highlight tape that we were talking about, like when you couldn't find it anywhere. But this is the one. This is the one that blew up the internet. This is the dawn of the YouTube era. YouTube's been around. When this comes out, YouTube's been around. It's existed for about 3 years, but it is just entering mainstream consciousness. Everybody's just getting high-speed internet in their houses. And this one just explodes. It is, of course, Sam McGuffey, Cy Fair High School, Cypress, Texas. I just remember seeing this, the third play of Sam McGuffey's high school highlight film. I screamed when I saw it. First two are nice runs where he finds a hole, jukes some people. The third one, He just jumps a guy, like hurdles him like he's not even there. It spawned imitators. At the All-Star Games, he was asked to recreate it. My favorite clip, and I tried to find it. I think it's been scrubbed from the internet. Is these two guys, and I think they were in Texas as well. And they're just in their backyard, and they're trying to hurdle each other with a football. And every time they jump, they go, McGuffey! Sam McGuffey went to Michigan. Actually played really well as a freshman at Michigan. Could have done well there. Had to go home. Had a situation where he needed to get home to Houston. Wound up transferring to Rice. Had a decent career. Became an Olympic bobsledder. Like, was in the Olympics for the United States as a bobsledder. And then you can look on YouTube. Like 7 or 8 years ago, when he's 25 years old, he made an audition tape for American Ninja Warrior. He could still do all that stuff. All of it. Turnwater football in the chat. Fotuliatu in Washington had the highest viewed huddle highlights in history for some time. That's an interesting one. And it reminds me of a guy who also just missed this list. Vita Vea. If you watch Vita Vea's high school highlights, a lot of him playing running back. A lot of Vita Vea at running back. And it's... Whew. You saw poor kids trying to make tackles. He's 300 pounds already at that point. It was pretty awesome. Now we get into the God tier, the top three. These are the greatest three. These are the ones that people could never stop watching. Noel Devine, North Fort Myers High. I will accept these in any order. If you think my order's wrong, and Noel Devine should be number one or number two, I get it. I understand. Noel Devine was absolutely electrifying. When this hit the internet, people in Florida lost their minds. Because this is the guy playing against very good competition in Southwest Florida. And there was no one who could come close to him. No one. And Noel Devine wound up being a very good running back at West Virginia. But you'll never see dominance like this. People just grasping air the entire time. He was impossible to tackle. Number two, the one who started this debate in the first place, Reggie Bush. This was one that got passed around. This is one that people sought out on DVDs. Like, I had a DVD copy of that. Helix High School in San Diego. You saw everything that you were going to see at USC. The speed, the power, the precision, the receiving ability. Everything that Reggie Bush was about to become at USC, you could see in this highlight tape. And it was awesome. Just absolutely awesome. And again, this is one, like, if you were like me and lived on the East Coast and you got to see this, it was like magic. Because where would you have seen that otherwise? TV shows, there were a couple recruiting TV shows, but not really. And they were very regional. Y'all don't know how good you have it, you youngsters. I hate to go old man. That's what we had in my day. And we liked it. I hate to do that. But y'all have no clue how good you have it. Being able to pop on a huddle clip and seeing everybody who played. Like, you look at the rankings. If you go to On3's rankings right now, we have clips embedded where you can watch video of all these guys in the class of 25, class of 26. We had nothing like that back then. Nothing. That brings us to number one. And I couldn't find the one that was the most popular one back when Jadeveon Clowney was a recruit, because that one started with him returning a kickoff. And Jadeveon Clowney is a high schooler at South Point High School in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Jadeveon Clowney was about the size he was at South Carolina. He got a little bit bigger at South Carolina. A little bit bigger. But he was about that size already. And so there are obviously clips of him sacking quarterbacks. He was always going to be an edge rusher. That was always the plan. But South Point used him as a running back. They used him as a kick returner. So there's There's a play on his highlight tape where I believe it's like a 90-yard touchdown run. But then there's also the one, it's a, I believe, a state championship game. It's played at Williams-Brice Stadium where he's playing Everett Golson's team, and he's just ragdolling Everett Golson. It was like, this is the scariest human being I've ever seen in my life. I don't, you could never block this guy, and you could never tackle this guy. And so when he hit Vincent Smith in the Outback Bowl, everybody who watched this highlight tape 5 million times was like, yep, saw that coming. Jadeveon Clowney is your number one high school highlight tape. Again, if you want to go with Reggie Bush or Noel Devine, I'm open to the arguments, but man, that dude, you just can't believe that someone who's 16, 17 years old can do any of this stuff. And Jadeveon Clowney did all of that stuff. It was amazing. Amazing. Our next question comes from a friend, John. So John's a producer at SiriusXM that I used to work with. And he tweeted at me yesterday. He said, what sports wrongs would you like to see righted? This was in response to Reggie Bush getting his Heisman back. Pete Rose, of course, or bring teams like the Raiders and Rams home. For John, it's bring back quote-unquote normal OTs in football. I think you were talking about the NFL, the old five-minute period, or, you know, not five-minute, the 15-minute period where it's just sudden death. I don't know if I want that back or not. The Pete Rose thing's interesting. He did bet on baseball, so that's, like, real bad. But I am Jeff Passan, who covers baseball for ESPN, and I think the way he looks at the Hall of Fame is very interesting. I like his take on it, where he talks about the Baseball Hall of Fame being a museum that should take in the whole history of the game, not just the good, not just the sunny stuff, but to explain the history, because, you know, if we forget our history, we're doomed to repeat it. And so you do that, you would be able to put Pete Rose in, you'd be able to put Shoeless Joe Jackson in. So anybody who was involved in a gambling scandal, you'd be able to put them in. But you'd say, hey, these guys were involved in gambling scandals. And then the steroid era guys. So you'd have Barry Bonds in. I think that would probably be a better way to handle it. And you put the disclaimer, like, Barry Bonds' head size went from this with the Pirates to this with the Giants. I think that would be a better way to handle it. And it would teach people the history of the game, and people would better understand and contextualize the stats of the steroid era. Because let's be real, baseball used the steroid era to its advantage. That Maguire-Sosa summer of 98 was great for the game. Brought the game back from the strike, or the lockout, strike, whatever. The owners and the players both were at fault for 94. So the steroid era brought the game back from that, brought it back into the national consciousness, made it popular again. So to ignore it in the Hall of Fame seems a little weird. John, I'm going to push back on the Rams going back home. John's younger than me. The Rams are back home. When I was a kid, the Rams played in Los Angeles. Then they went to St. Louis, and now they play in Los Angeles again. The Cardinals played in St. Louis. So maybe you want to bring the Cardinals home. But then who would play in Phoenix? Because I think Phoenix needs a team. The Raiders, well, they were in Oakland, then they were in Los Angeles, then they were in Oakland again, and now they're in Vegas. I actually think Vegas is a good spot for them. I was trying to think of some other ones, and I got a lot of suggestions of the NCAA should do this. When does Jim Tressel get his reputation back? Jim Tressel was hired as a university president at Youngstown State. His reputation's fine. Would it be nice if the NCAA would be like, yeah, that was kind of stupid, what we did? Here's the stupidest part. This is when you knew it was completely cooked. We'll go back to that Ohio State tattoo gate thing. Remember then when they suspended the players? They suspended, it was Terrell Pryor, Devere Posey, it was a few other players. And they suspended them for 5 games. But they were like, no, we need you to play in the Sugar Bowl. Because remember, the Big Ten commissioner, Jim Delaney, had come in and negotiated that because the Big Ten couldn't win a BCS bowl game. And it looked like Ohio State could beat Arkansas. But if those 5 guys didn't play, they wouldn't be able to beat Arkansas. So they cooked it so that those guys could play in the Sugar Bowl, but then they'd be suspended. Which, if you're Terrell Pryor and Devere Posey and the guys who are up for suspension, you're like, what the hell is this? You need us to win this game to make the conference look good, but then you're going to make us sit out half the season? What is this crap? But I don't think they're going to give anybody's wins back. Like, I don't think they'll give Bobby Bowden the wins back that they vacated for the textbook sellback thing, which I realize everybody cares about numbers like that. We know how many games Bobby Bowden won. Like, it doesn't matter. But those NCAA penalties, I don't think they're ever going to change them. It would be interesting if they just hang some banners again. Like, what do you think would happen if Memphis just hung the Final Four banner again? Like, why not? Who does anything about that now? Like, the NCAA doesn't have any power anymore. What are they going to do? So just hang the banner. You want to hang a banner that had been vacated by the NCAA? Hang it. They're not going to stop you. All right. We move on. Nathan has a draft question. Congrats, you've been hired as a professional general manager, constructing your team completely from scratch. What is your draft philosophy? I've been thinking about this in relation to how I would do it in college football, and I think it's similar but not entirely the same between college and the pros. I think the quarterback is critically important in the NFL. I don't think you have to have a super special quarterback if you'd like to win the Super Bowl. In college football, you can have an okay quarterback. You can have a pretty good quarterback and be all right. Like Stetson Bennett, pretty good quarterback. He's a very good college quarterback, but he wasn't otherworldly. I think you have to have that guy in the NFL. So obviously, that's where I'm going first. If there's somebody super special, like there's Caleb Williams, I'm going to try to take Caleb Williams because maybe he's that guy. It's still a crapshoot, even when you think it's that guy. But he feels like the closest thing in this year's draft to that guy. So that's where I'm going first. But then everything else is going to be built exactly the same. I want offensive tackles, edge rushers, interior defensive linemen, corners, and probably in that order, but the best of those. And then once I get all that, then I'm going interior offensive linemen. Because the better you are on the line of scrimmage, the better you are, period. I look at, you know, the Eagles and the 49ers are a good example of this. They've been in the mix pretty much every year the last few years. And why are they in the mix? Because they're better on the line of scrimmage than anybody else. The Eagles' offensive line is better than everybody else's offensive line. The 49ers' offensive line is close. It's not far behind. 49ers' D-line, crazy. The Eagles' D-line has been outstanding. That's how you do it. Like, you can have all the great receivers you want, great running backs. None of it matters if you don't, because you can have a ham sandwich at running back if you have a good offensive line. Like, the NFL proves that year after year, and college football is the same thing. Like, the teams that dominate the line of scrimmage are the teams that are in the mix every single year. You don't win every year, but you're in the mix every single year. So that's how I'd build it. Like the NFL, I'd make sure I had the quarterback. If I was a college GM, which that job is almost the same as an NFL GM, I would just be signing multiple quarterbacks every year, hope I hit on one. NFL GM, I'd take a quarterback every year. Like, I'd have my first round guy that I take, but then next year I'm taking somebody in the third or fourth round that I think has high upside, just as a flyer, because I might hit on somebody. I realize Tom Brady's the GOAT. He got picked number 199 overall. That's not normal. Most of the best quarterbacks picked in the first round. But you can find guys later in the draft. Dak Prescott, later in the draft. So I would take somebody third or fourth round at quarterback pretty much every year just to give myself more chances to hit on that franchise guy. That's the one thing I would do that I don't know that a lot of GMs do, which I think I'm stealing from college, because college coach will tell you, always have four quarterbacks in your room and don't worry about if you've got four. If you have a good one who wants to come, take them. Let somebody transfer. Like, just keep taking bites of that apple until you get the guy. That's the only way to do it. Next question comes from Justin. Dear Andy, thanks for joining the mock draft prophecy, which, by the way, as soon as somebody makes a trade, my mock draft's going to look stupid. I'm accepting that. I'm accepting that somebody's going to trade up. It's not going to be the trade I predicted. And there's going to be like six trades. And I'll be completely wrong. But Justin says, if you could match any player to any team that could be drafted in any round based on how that player would fit into the team, who would be the players and who would be the teams? All right. I saw this yesterday online, and I wish I could give the person credit because it's somebody who used one of the PFF or ESPN, one of those companies that gives you the trade machine to try to trade picks. And they had basically had the Dolphins trade their entire draft to move up to pick Marvin Harrison Jr. And I was imagining Marvin Harrison Jr., Tyreek Hill, and Jalen Waddle catching passes from Tua Tagovailoa. And I realized I just said, you gotta be great on the lines of scrimmage. That's the only thing that matters. But oh my God, would that be fun? That would be so much fun watching more. And the reason I say Marvin Harrison over Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze in this particular situation is because of the physical profile of Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. I want a bigger guy. I want the biggest of these guys that I can take, and that's Marvin Harrison Jr. So that trio would be so hard to cover. It would be incredible. So much fun to watch. I think the other thing that I'm going to be watching for is how many Michigan guys are going to end up with Jim Harbaugh. Because there's a chance that they could have 17 or 18 guys drafted off that team. Now, J.J. McCarthy's not going to end up with Harbaugh because they don't need a quarterback. They've got Justin Herbert. But, like, will Zach Zinter, Mikey Sanristil, Junior Colston, Chris Jenkins, Blake Corum, will some of those guys wind up with him? Like, Junior Colston, like, the other thing about this is, remember, you have Mike McDonald, who just became the head coach in Seattle. He was Michigan's defensive coordinator a few years ago before going to the Ravens. Jesse Minter, who replaced Mike McDonald, is Jim Harbaugh's DC with the Chargers now. So, like, I can imagine the Seahawks and the Chargers fighting over Junior Colston because they both know what he can do in their defense. They know exactly what he looks like. Another one from my mock draft. Florida State D tackle Braden Fisk. That man was designed to play for Dan Campbell, and Dan Campbell was designed to coach Braden Fisk. Those two belong together. That should be the Lions' first round pick. I'm saying it right now. Because if they don't pick him in the first round, he'll be gone by the time they come back around. If Braden Fisk doesn't go in the late first, he's going in the early second. Some team's going to be really lucky to get him. But I'm just telling you, Braden Fisk and Dan Campbell would be best friends immediately. It would be like the scene in Step Brothers. Well, I guess they didn't become best friends immediately. But it would be like the scene where they said, did we just become best friends? Yes. And it would happen fast. Another obvious one, Jeremiah Trotter Jr. from Clemson. He's got to go to the Eagles, right? Dad was a four-time Pro Bowler for the Eagles. It would be pretty awesome. Jeremiah Trotter. Lots of Jeremiah Trotter on the Eagles. Perfect. One more. We mentioned yesterday when I was talking to Jesse Simonson about our all-college football team in the draft, the people that were just our favorites in college football that are now moving on to the NFL. Torrey Taylor, the punter from Iowa. What a weapon he is. So I was thinking, what team just needs everything? Like, what team needs yards? Because Torrey Taylor gets you yards. Like, if we're talking from an analytics standpoint, who in this draft creates the biggest net change in yards for you? Torrey Taylor's high up there. So who doesn't have a bunch of money, needs everything, and needs net yards? The Denver Broncos. The Denver Broncos are paying $40-something million for Russell Wilson this year. He's not playing for them. He's playing for the Steelers. They're cap hell. They've had to give away everything. They don't have a quarterback. They might draft one. We'll see. But they've missing pieces everywhere. Well, you get Torrey Taylor in round three. All of a sudden, you got some yards. And so I'm sorry, Riley Dixon, who is Denver's current punter. It is not bad, but he's not Torrey Taylor. That's the pick right there. Torrey Taylor is going to get you net yards. And trust me, you need net yards for cheap. This is the cheapest you're going to get net yards. Next question comes from our friend Willie.
Dear Andy, in regards to this new transfer portal era, which I actually think might be a shorter era than we might imagine, and I'll get to that. I was having a conversation with a friend on Twitter. Oh, side note, I was the Twitter person that gave you the idea for the Nacosifications. But back to my question and to my point. With the new transfer portal era, how much of a role do you think if it plays for the quote-unquote COVID kids, to where now there's such a surplus of athletes in college football because we're on years 6, 7, 8, and some people 9 years, that kind of really just take up roster spots that we won't see. And I guess what we have maybe 2 more years left of COVID kids.
So we don't have much left. So the class of 2020, this is their 5th year. So remember, 2020 didn't count for them at all. So if they played in 2020, then they had another redshirt year. So that, yes, they could be playing next year. But if they didn't play in 2020, they still had 4 to play. They basically had 5 to play 4. After 2020, if they played 4, so if they played 2021, 22, 23, 24, they're done after this year. So we're actually going to see most of those guys cycle out after this year. There will still be a couple of stragglers next year, but this is pretty much it for the COVID generation. And so our friend Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl said it really well. Between NIL and the COVID year, this will be the single deepest year for talent in college football. Next year will be the single deepest NFL draft ever. And it'll be the last one like that because, again, everybody's pretty much cycling out. Now, NIL is still going to be changing things. There will still be guys who will turn down being a 6th-round draft pick to go back to college to make some money and then hopefully better their draft stock. But there won't be people who have this option of another year to come back. There are going to be people who just run out of eligibility now and they're going pro. So that's the difference. We're almost to that point where it's been very confusing to this point of who's eligible. There's been a lot of like, that guy's still in college? Yeah. If you were in college in 2020, it's very confusing because if you redshirted in 2020, which it's not even really a redshirt, but if you didn't play in 2020, that actually hurts you because you would have needed to redshirt some other year to get that extra year. If you played in 2020, then you had a redshirt in some other year. The truth says next year will be the single deepest draft. I've ever been hearing that since 2020. Okay, Chief. Yeah, except next year actually will. Because it will, because there's the most people who are good in it. The oldest. It'll be the oldest draft too. So, yeah. Okay, Chief. I'm sorry. I'm just going by what the actual NFL scouts say. But the truth, you know, random YouTube commenter, I'm sure you know better than me. So yeah, Willie, it's almost done. It will be back on track for the most part next year where we'll probably be able to guess, okay, that guy, this is the year he came in. This is the year he will leave for the NFL. It will be a lot easier to figure out once we get to that point. But there will still be some stragglers. If you started in 2020 and then redshirted 21, 22, 23, then you can. All right, next question comes from Josh. I feel like there hasn't been enough discussion on the first round of the new expanded playoffs being on the home field of the lower seed. As an Ohio State fan and someone who lived in Big Ten country all my life, the Midwest winter and elements can definitely swing games to the more physical team. I've seen many Ohio State teams sludge through the winter in the back half of the schedule and then need an SEC team in a dome and have to adjust to attract me. How do you think this will affect the playoffs, and what do you expect teams in the SEC to do to prepare for these conditions? Being a Browns fan as well, we just saw Deshaun Watson play in his first snow game this past season. How does a team mostly composed of Southern-born players prepare for the mental and physical adjustment of cold weather in such a short period? Now, I will push back on Josh that we haven't talked. It's the only thing we've talked about when it's come to the games at home. Like, we love it. It's great. I'm so excited that there's going to be a real home field advantage and that Southern teams are going to have to go play in cold weather. I'm the one who says, why are the other games in bowls? Like, it should be on campus until you get to the national championship game. And I'm hoping they come to their senses and eventually do that. But as for your, how are they going to deal with cold weather? Ohio State built for the, Ohio State hasn't looked built for the cold in the last few years. Like, Ohio State actually looks like a team built for a dome compared to Michigan, which has absolutely looked like if that Michigan team of the last couple of years had gotten home games in the playoff, they would have dominated those games. They were built for cold weather. Now, this Ohio State team, with the defense it has, I think will do very well in the cold. I don't know that that's going to matter because I think there's a good chance they win the Big Ten and have a bye. But I will point out to you in terms of the cold weather games, because you're saying, what do they do to prepare? They put on warm clothes and go play. The Packers have played at home 4 times in the last few years in the playoffs. Lambeau Field, probably the best weather advantage you can get in the NFL in the playoffs. They've lost 3 of those last 4. They lost 2 of them to the 49ers, 1 of them to the Bucs. So it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win. It's just something that the other team's not used to. That doesn't mean they're not going to play well in it. And I realize in the NFL, some of those guys did play in cold weather situations growing up or in college. But yeah, Southern people don't like the cold. Like, we live down here for a reason, because we're smart enough to live somewhere where it's warm. But you can go up there for 3 hours and be in the cold. And if you play well, you still win. Now, what's interesting in this case is that cold weather team will be the higher seeded team. Although that's the same in the NFL. It didn't help the Packers the last few times. But I do think it's something we've talked about quite a bit. And I can't wait till we get to talk about it for real. Like, we have real matchups and we can say, this, the weather's going to be 22 degrees. The wind's going to be blowing 15 miles an hour. Here's the wind chill. Like, we can actually say that. Now, I'm hoping it's not like that Chiefs-Dolphins game last year, because that was bad. That was probably unsafe for the fans. That was probably, I don't know. I don't know what you do to change that. But that didn't seem safe for the fans in the stands. But if it's just cold, like normal cold, players put on some parkas. Nike happy to be able to sell some parkas, I guess. But we'll see. That's the part we want to see, is how does the home field advantage affect those matchups? And I hope it's very advantageous, because that will give even more cachet to those games at the end of the regular season that decide who gets seeded where. I think that would be very, very interesting. Last one from Matthew. With conference realignment changes taking place this coming fall, will the ESPN financial instability influence future TV deals? Will they opt out of the ACC deal in February 2025 to destabilize the conference and mitigate their risk strengthening their SEC investment? So what Matthew's asking about is, the ESPN has an option to either opt in or opt out to the remainder of the ACC contract, for basically the back half of the ACC contract. And they have until February 2025 to make the decision on whether they're going to do that. So for the 27 season through the 36 season would be that what they'd be opting into or out of. And what Matthew's saying is, do you destabilize the ACC to make the SEC look better because you've got all your money in the SEC? No, I don't think ESPN would do that. ESPN has a nice cost control thing with the ACC. Like, ESPN still has to put stuff on. ESPN still needs inventory. ESPN has a network with the ACC that makes money, that they would like to continue making money on. So they have a really cost-controlled thing that if they were to destabilize it, it probably drives up the price of the SEC investment, takes away your inventory that you got relatively cheaply, probably increases your cost to your Big 12 investment, because that's where some of those teams would go. So no, I don't think that's a good idea at all. I think ESPN would be like, look, we made these deals with the intention of having to pay this money for this long. We don't want anything to change. That's what we were planning for. So I don't know what they do, but I don't get the sense that that's what they want to do. I don't get the sense that they want to blow up the ACC because they have a nice cost-controlled investment here for a long period of time. Why make it uncertain? Why potentially raise your prices everywhere else? Now, there may be nothing they can do if Florida State, Clemson, North Carolina, if they wind up getting out of the ACC, like if Florida State and Clemson, which are suing the ACC and the ACC suing them, if they were to settle that case, just pay some money and get out, then it changes the value of the ACC, but it's still inventory. It's still a situation where you have a channel with them that is a revenue driver. I don't know that you'd want to change it, even if you lose those teams. But I guess we'll find out. I don't get the sense that a settlement necessarily gets reached before that. Because if a settlement got reached and we knew that those schools were leaving, maybe that changes the math on it. But I think if you're ESPN right now, you just look at your investment, you say, we have a relatively low price. Let's keep it there if we can. But you never know, because at this point, expect the unexpected. This is a very strange, strange time in college football. So we'll find out what happens over the next few months. We'll find out what happens in the draft tonight, first round. We'll be back with our guy, Phillip Dukes, on Friday morning to recap everything that happened in the first round. We'll talk about any sort of transfer portal news that pops. Always something, but cannot wait to watch the NFL draft, watch some of our favorite college players, watch their dreams come true. Always fun, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.